This is Asia Weekly from the Voice of America, the podcast that goes beyond the headlines and places events into context. Kim Jong-un is the third leader of North Korea. Since 2012, the young leader has conducted a pair of nuclear tests, threatened the United States with war, and shown no signs of stopping what Washington calls provocative behavior. Why and what should the West do? Hey everyone, Steve Miller here. Great to have you with me today. A pair of nuclear tests, progress on submarine-based attack missiles, and a pair of satellites launched into space are the highlights of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's nearly 4 years in power. Despite what the United Nations says are the strongest sanctions against the repressive regime, why hasn't Kim curtailed his provocative behavior? Daniel Pinkston is a lecturer on international relations at Troy University in Seoul.
Well, because the regime is very motivated. They're highly motivated, and the nuclear missile program, those programs are extremely important. They place a high priority on those programs.
Joshua Stanton, a Washington-based attorney and editor of the website One Free Korea, adds,
so when you see people who are saying that, gee, why haven't the sanctions already had an effect? They're raising the goalpost to an unrealistic position.
In his view, until recently, the sanctions against North Korea have been relatively weak, and he feels that there is still room to make the existing sanctions stronger by enforcing them fully. Stanton also says it will take time and political will to make the sanctions currently in place effective. However, Kim Jong-un continues to carry out provocative actions, and in recent months, some have even asked if it is time to revisit the strategy of relying only on sanctions to change North Korea's behavior.
I'm all in favor of combining sanctions with other activities. I think that we need to combine them with international pressure on human rights and information operations to reach directly to and engage with the people of North Korea as opposed to the state. And eventually, at some point, we will want to seek a diplomatic resolution with the North Korean government, if that's possible. But the fact that the North Korean government behaves in belligerent, provocative ways, it's really no way to judge whether your policy is working. It means that the North Koreans have some incentive to manipulate us.
Daniel Pinkston says there are limited options when dealing with North Korea. Sure, nations could choose to disarm North Korea by force, but that would
unleash so much death and destruction. It would be a intense conflict that would lead to many deaths, and the cure would be worse than the disease. So I don't think anyone is seriously contemplating that. But short of the use of force, the current regime and its orientation and its identity and its worldview and its national security policy and everything else means that the regime is committed to the development of these programs.
With Kim not showing any indications of altering his plans, what should the international community do to steer North Korea towards behavior more in line with what it desires? Joshua Stanton.
We have to present the government of North Korea, and not necessarily Kim Jong-un personally, but the government of North Korea with an existential choice. Will they pursue nuclear weapons? Will they reform? Will they make changes in their humanitarian policies to their own people? Or will they simply perish? We have to really present them with the choice that they have to abide by certain basic rules of civilized humanity and live in peace with their neighbors, with us, with our allies, or frankly, the character of the regime must be changed by denying it access to the money that sustains the regime.
But is that something that realistically can be done?
I think that's really the most important and the toughest question right now. We're in the middle of a presidential election between two candidates who aren't very popular with the American people, neither of whom has really articulated a very strong policy vision with regard to North Korea.
Joshua Stanton also says that the outcome of the South Korean presidential election could have influence on the international community's approach to North Korea. He notes conservative South Korean governments, like the current Park Geun-hye administration, take harder lines than liberal parties. Daniel Pinkston says that the international community can always strive to do better.
But whatever measures the international community takes, I think the regime is so committed. And we have to remind ourselves and remember that this is a case of strategic interaction. North Korea has a vote. They have some say in the outcome. It's not based 100% on our behavior or countermeasures or activities. So North Korea influences the outcome. And that's unfortunate. But the good news is that they're in a weak position. I think their orientation is unsustainable in the long run.
North Korea continues to develop technology to further its weapons capabilities, including submarines capable of launching ballistic missiles. In response to the DPRK's actions, South Korea will deploy THAAD, a high-altitude missile defense shield, something that's already garnered criticism from China and resulted in backlash against Seoul. Japan has also announced greater vigilance after North Korean rockets landed in its territorial waters and will update its Patriot missile defense system ahead of the 2020 Olympics. That is going to do it for this episode, but the conversation doesn't end here. Is the West placing sufficient pressure on North Korea, and will it only be a matter of time before North Korean leader Kim Jong-un adheres to UN resolutions, or should the West adopt a new course of action? Please share your answer with me on Twitter or Facebook at SteveMillerVOA, or you can do so on our community Facebook page, VOA Now. If you enjoyed this episode, please share with your friends, and to get the podcast delivered to you automatically, subscribe in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for joining me this week. And from Washington, I'm Steve Miller.